Hello everyone, my name is Kyriakos Destounis and today I will be talking to you about the gravitational wave signatures of non-integrability in extreme mass ratio in spirals. In the following slides, I will be discussing these two papers in a collaboration with Arthur Suvorov and Kostas Kokotas. Extreme mass ratio in spirals are binaries which consist of a primary supermassive black hole and a secondary small mass compact object. They usually originate in galactic centers, and the mass ratio between the secondary over the primary span in the range of 10 to the minus 6 to 10 to the minus 4. Extreme mass ratio in spirals generate gravitational waves in the frequency range of 10 to the minus 4 to 10 to the minus 1 hertz, which makes them prime targets for space-borne interferometers like LISA and Taichi. They are expected to perform around 10 to the 5 revolutions in the strong field regime, which will lead to waveforms with very rich waveform phenomenology. Now, on short timescales, an extreme mass ratio in spiral can be modeled through the geodesic equation. If we assume a stationary and axisymmetric spacetime with the following line element, then instantly through stationarity, we can get one constant of motion, which we call the energy of the point particle. From axisymmetry, we get another constant of motion, which is the z component of the angular momentum. The conservation of rest mass leads to a very nice constraint equation with an effective potential of this form, which basically tells us that we have bound motion in the two available degrees of freedom of the problem. When the effective potential is equal to zero, we have the so-called curve of zero velocity, which is self-explanatory. Now, the two remaining equations of motion for the r and theta coordinate are essentially differential equations of the second order, and in general, they cannot be separated. But if a fourth constant of motion is present, another Killing tensor, then we have the so-called Carter constant, for example, in Kerr spacetime, and then we can separate radial from polar motion. This leads to the so-called integrability of the geodesic equations. On the absence of a fourth constant of motion, of course, we have non-integrable geodesics. Now, on the long time scale, we can simulate extreme mass ratio in spirals through the process of radiation reaction. Here we will use the adiabatic approximation, which essentially tells us that the change in the momenta is sufficiently small over a single orbit, thus allowing us to average the gravitational shell force. Therefore, on short timescales, we will have orbits that evolve from the geodesic equations, while on long timescales, the in-spiral will behave like a flow through successive geodesics. We will further approximate the averaged shell force with a hybrid clutch sim, which essentially approximates the fluxes of the momenta with post-Newtonian formulas. And on top of that, because we will be using a deformed Kerr spacetime, we will include additional post-Newtonian terms, which represent the effects of anomalous quadrupole moments introduced from the deformation parameters we will assume. So let's start by assuming a theory-agnostic spacetime inspired by Tim Johansen, which essentially has this line element. It really looks quite similar to the Kerr spacetime, but includes two different deformation parameters, the one shown in blue, alpha 2,2, and the one shown in red, alpha q. If we send these two parameters to zero, we trivially take back the Kerr metric, while when the blue parameter, which essentially deforms freight dragging, is non-zero, then we still have a Carter constant, and we will refer to this metric as a deformed Kerr metric. On the other hand, when the red parameter, which controls integrability, is non-zero, then we will not have a Carter constant and we will not have integrability of the geodesic equations. Therefore, we will refer to this spacetime as non-Kerr. And here, I would like to show you a couple of orbits in a non-Kerr spacetime assumed by the previous metric. Here, I show you a parametric plot of the radial and the polar available degrees of freedom. In black, we see a curve of zero velocity. And we have two orbits here, one in blue, which is a generic orbit, and one in red, which is a periodic or resonant orbit. Generic orbits, in general, when they start from an initial point, they never return to it, and they fill the available phase space densely, while resonant orbits, like this one shown in red, oscillate enough times so that after some revolutions, they turn back to the initial condition that we started the orbit with. Now, as we can see from this figure, there are some available libration. We can infer some libration-like frequencies, which essentially are radial and polar, and describe oscillations through the equatorial plane. Now, if we do a three-dimensional Cartesian projection into these orbits, we see that the generic orbit, which has a ratio of these libration-like frequencies to be irrational, that has this form, which looks quite generic. On the other hand, the resonant or periodic orbits have a rational ratio of these two orbital frequencies, and you see that the orbit really has a non-space filling structure. So if we assume that we have a system with some particular Hamiltonian that has integrable geodesics, then if we choose a particular surface of section to sketch a so-called Poincaré map, then by measuring the successive intersections of our orbit through this surface of section, we will see that we have a formation of something like this scheme here, where U0 is a central point of the surface of section, and these circles that form around them are essentially called the KM curves. Now, this happens in integrable systems, including here, and it's a quite trivial figure. On the other hand, when we have a non-integrable perturbation into our Hamiltonian, then we have two theorems to describe exactly what happens in the phase space. The Kolmogorov-Arnold-Moser theorem states that if a system is non-integrable, then the dynamics smoothly depart from the integrable one, provided that the ratio of the orbital frequencies is sufficiently irrational. Now, the Poincaré-Birkhoff theorem, on the other hand, states that if this ratio is rational, so if we are in a resonance, then we have a formation of a Birkhoff chain. And we can see all that happening here. Again, we have a fixed point U0 of the surface of section, some KM curves that still form away from a resonance, but close to the resonance, which we correspond to a circle here, the KM curve disintegrates, but still keeps some structure. The thing that I want you to keep from this figure is this filled black dot and this non-filled circle. This non-filled circle is the source of unstable circular orbits that are chaotic and form layers that surround these formations here. And the filled black dots are the points where periodic stable orbits emanate. Now, the difference is that we have a formation of resonant KM curves that nest around the available periodic points, and this is called a Birkhoff island. Now, what's important in the Birkhoff island is that when an orbit crosses through it, the ratio remains unchanged, the ratio of these orbital frequencies. Therefore, we are in a prolonged resonance when we break integrability and have this kind of structures. Now, the impact of non-integrability at the orbital level can be easily assessed by the calculation of the rotation number. The rotation number is essentially the accumulation of angles, denoted by this curly theta in our case, between two successive intersections on a Poincaré map. If we measure a lot of angles and we calculate this series, then we will see that the rotation number will converge to the ratio of these two orbital frequencies. Successive rotation numbers form a rotation curve, and in integrable systems, they are expected to be monotonous. On the other hand, when non-integrability is present in our system, we have a plateau inside a resonant island because the ratio remains constant as long as we belong inside this island. So the point here of this presentation is to show you what happens when we have a deformed curve or a non-curve spacetime, so integrable or non-integrable, and how this emanates at the orbital level now and later at the waveform level. Here, I'm plotting the rotation number as it evolves with respect to time of an in spiral that has a mass ratio of 10 to the minus 6 and some particular initial conditions that are not quite interesting at this point. And we see that at the deformed curve metric, the evolution of the rotation curve is essentially monotonous. Even when we cross through this resonance of 2/3, nothing really happens because there's no Birkhoff chain and Birkhoff islands and so on. But in the non-Kerr case, where we explicitly break integrability, we see the formation of a transient plateau right around this 2/3 rotation number, which designates that we actually have some structure there and non-integrability. Now, this orbit spends around 250 cycles. And this should somehow emanate at the waveform level. And here we would like to assess that as well. And to model our waveforms, we use the numerical clads scheme, which combines the exact particle trajectories we already calculated with the previous schemes and approximate the gravitational wave emissions with particular expressions. Now, this is a quick and dirty methodology, but is perfectly suited for phenomenology. And it has remarkable agreement with Tucholsky-based waveforms. Now, we will use the Einstein quadruple formula, which essentially describes the metric perturbation with respect to the quadruple tensor capital I, the in-spiral trajectory capital Z, and the luminosity distance D, which is the distance between the source and the detector. Then the incoming gravitational wave can be easily written down with respect to the previous as with respect to the in-spiral trajectory and derivatives of it. And of course, projected in particular polarization states, the plus and cross ones. Now the LISA response patterns, if we assume that we have the LISA detector, can be easily written down if we know the plus and cross polarization of the gravitational wave. And these capital F plus and F cross functions are the antenna pattern functions, which essentially depend on the sky localization of the source with respect to the detector. We will approximate the LISA response at the single channel approach, and we will, for simplicity, omit any noise in the data stream. So we will again evolve two EMRIs. One will be in a deformed curve background. The other one will be in a non-curve background, and we will let them both pass over the two-third resonance. In the deformed curve case, we will not have an island. In the non-curve case, we will have a Birkhoff island. Let's see what happens. If we evolve these systems, we take the gravitational waveforms, we take the LISA response, and then we perform a Fourier transform on them, we can essentially plot a spectrogram and see how the frequency evolved with respect to time. Here, in the deformed curve case, we see a very trivial frequency evolution, which is monotonous, similar to what happens to the rotation number. And the waveform spans through some available frequencies in a very simple manner without anything happening, even though we're crossing a resonance. In the non-curve case now, where we have explicitly chosen initial conditions to cross through a Birkhoff island, we see that there's a particular formation of what we call a glitch, that is an abrupt and sudden jump of frequencies. This happens exactly at the timescale when we enter and leave the Birkhoff island. Therefore, here we have a clear astrophysical origin for this particular glitch here. To sum up, we have seen that integrable deformations lead to extremous ratio in spirals, which smoothly deviate from those of curve. Non-integrable perturbations lead to the formation of resonant islands, and the crossing of these resonant islands leads to waveforms which have frequency glitches. Since we expect that thousands of EMRIs are going to be detected by the LISA detector at least, and since the LISA pathfinder has shown that the mechanical glitch event rate will be 1 per 2 days, here we are trying to assess the fact that discarding these glitches a priori without knowing if they have an astrophysical origin or not may miss smoking gun physics. Thank you very much.